Welcome to the PeopleStack podcast, where we discuss the intersection of people, work, and technology. I'm your host, Jen Bunk, founder of Jen Bunk Ventures and creator of PeopleStack Academy. My guest for this episode is Taras Mankowski. He's a CTO of This Dot and is known online as Ember Sherpa. Welcome, Taras.
Thank you, Jen. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. Cool. Yeah, it's great to have you here. I'm excited to dive right into our conversation. So why don't we start with Ember Sherpa? Why don't you tell us a little bit about Ember Sherpa, and then we can talk a little bit about some of the other projects you're working on as well.
Okay, cool. So Ember Sherpa, I think Ember Sherpa would be like my personality on the internet for the last 3 or 4 years. It came from my passion for helping people understand and be good at things. And I spent the last 3 years focusing on Ember.js, which is a front-end framework for building ambitious web applications. Mm-hmm. So I've been using Ember Sherpa Twitter account as a way of kind of focusing on helping people be good at Ember.js. And I got a pretty decent following, and I've been able to use that that Twitter account to kind of cultivate my presence in the Ember community. And so it's been a pretty amazing experience overall. It's been really great to be good at something and be able to take that and help others be good at that as well. Mm-hmm.
So for those of us who don't know or don't know a lot about Ember.js, so Ember.js is a, I may get this wrong, it's a JavaScript framework? Is that a way of describing it? Okay.
Yeah. So it's a framework for building applications. The kind of user experiences that we see online and, we look at it and go, oh, that's, this application is really great. Like Gmail, for example, or really any app where you have to do something that runs in your browser is built as a web application, mm-hmm. or is a web application. And so Ember.js is a framework for building this kind of applications. Mm-hmm. And there's I think one of the biggest examples that people can relate to is LinkedIn right now is rewriting all of their apps to be written in Ember.js. And so I think a lot of their properties already, the newer versions of their apps are actually written in Ember. So Ember Sherpa for me was it was my gateway to making helping people a business. Yeah. It was very kind of experimental. It wasn't really clear how it was going to happen, and I've been learning as I was going. I've had a lot of success with our clients, like the people that work with us, love our services, which I'm very proud to say that. Mm-hmm. But building sustainable business, where we employ people and we can plan for the future, like creating that kind of business it requires a lot of ingredients, and one of the ingredients is it requires a mass. And that's what mass of users. That's been kind of difficult to cultivate, focusing on one framework. And so we've been focusing. We're now kind of moving away from just focusing on one framework and making our services more broadly available. Because I think that the key for us has been the fact that what we offer is a way for organizations, for groups of developers to have knowledge on demand in a way that is actually sustainable. I think that's one of the challenges that companies have is that they'll hire developers that will work on things together in groups, but those developers oftentimes are isolated from others. There's very few, it's not very common that you will see a group of developers that are all actively kind of connected to other people, mm-hmm. Online. And so a lot of times what happens is these developers will use Google to go find information they're looking for. They will use official resources to learn what they need to know to be productive at their job. Mm-hmm. But they won't get the kind of incidental or the information that they need. Like, there's a lot of times where you, as a developer, you know, you bump into something, and it's just a matter of like having the answer to that thing. And a lot of times, people don't, even developers don't have that. And so, what we've been trying to do with EmberSherpa is kind of answer the questions like, how do you make that knowledge available to teams in a systematic way, so that, you know, when a team, when someone realizes, okay, this is some, I'm missing something here, they just have a way to go and ask a question and get that answered.
So basically what I'm hearing you say, and correct me if I'm wrong, in this sort of developers can get stuck, right? That it's like you're doing your thing and everything is going fine, and then you hit a wall, right? Where it's like, okay, I don't know what to do next. And there's not an easy way for them to reach out and find the answer to those kinds of questions. Is that a good interpretation?
Yeah, that's totally. It's a great example, or a great way to summarize that. But I would also say that in some situations, walls are not, you know, the getting stuck isn't like once in a week or once in a day. Like sometimes getting stuck can be every 15 minutes you're stuck.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because one of the challenges that a lot of companies finding themselves in is they're realizing that like robust user experiences and having like very very dynamic user experiences on their sites or their applications is becoming kind of an expectation from the user's perspective. Mm-hmm. And they're realizing like to be competitive, they need to build those kind of user experiences. But a lot of the developers are backend developers, so developers who have experience writing applications that run on a server. They don't have this. They don't have the background to build modern dynamic user experiences.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so when a company says, okay, well, we're going to now transition. We would like these developers to now build this new kind of modern app. And when a developer who doesn't have the background in building this kind of user experiences, when they say to build this app, every like 15 minutes, every day, you're just constantly fighting. Like you're constantly bumping into things that you don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's not always an easy place to get answers, I mean, even within, depending on the organization, right? If you happen to have, like as a developer, if you happen to have a really great mentor or a really great manager within an organization, then that person can potentially be an awesome resource, but that doesn't always exist. And so it sounds like you're trying to fill that gap.
Yeah, definitely. You're definitely trying to help. I think one of the biggest things that companies I think should be thinking about now is, you know, where are the knowledge gaps? Not from a perspective like, you know, what is wrong with my team because my team doesn't know about this, but it's just acknowledging the realities that the technology is moving very quickly, and in many ways that the developers don't have all the information that they need to be productive.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, from an organizational perspective, to start questioning, like, what are the knowledge gaps mm-hmm. that we have? And what kind of structures can we create to fill those gaps? And so essentially what we do is we try to provide an easy way for an organization to understand what technical gaps they have, what knowledge gaps they have, and then mm-hmm. provide an easy way to fill those, you know, fill that gap so the information is available to the developers when they need it.
Got it. So what can you tell us about this dot? I know it sounds like it's a relatively new thing, and having started my own company, my own venture not so long ago, I know that it could sometimes be a little bit tricky in the earlier stages to not even just describe what it is that you're doing as you're sort of figuring it out. But that can be the fun part of it. Given that and understanding that it's very new, what can you tell us about this dot and what you're doing as CTO?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this dot, it's a kind of a culmination of a few different things that we've been trying over the last couple of years. But it's essentially a company that has two aspects to it. One is media aspect, which is and the other one is labs. And so the way that kind of breaks down is we have, or the way that works together is so media company focuses on, or media side of the business focuses on creating interactive or video content that can be used by developer, that organization can provide to their developers, or developers can watch or can, you know, learn from. Mm-hmm. So, you know, trying to create, like, we look for opportunities to bring information that would be useful to people, mm-hmm. To developers, and do it in a way that is actually interesting and not just like providing dry data, but actually like making the content engaging. Mm-hmm. And the second part is the labs part, which is we have kind of a collective of mentors who are going to be working together to support organizations. Well, actually, there's a few things. There's like mentors working together to continue to push forward the platform, like the web platform. So we have about, I think we're starting off with 12 or 13 mentors, and a lot of the people are like active participants in the open source community and contributing to their framework of interest. We actually have some core team people who are people who are actually writing these frameworks, who are on our list of mentors. And so what we're looking to do is help to like support these people in contributing to the open source framework, and then make them available to our clients so that their teams can learn from them, mm-hmm. and also build an apprenticeship program that we can use to systematically train developers in very specific, very applicable skills that they could, they could come and spend a specific amount of time working and then be able to apply those skills directly in the work that they're doing, you know, in their company, in their team. Mm-hmm. So really kind of focusing on, I see this as like being able to create services and provide information that isn't readily available, or it's not available in a way that would be consumable quickly without wasting time, without having to spend a lot of time searching for that information.
So it sounds like that's just something that's always been interesting to me. Folks from different industries struggle with the same kind of stuff. How do I help people? What kinds of content, what kind of media, what kind of services can I offer people? So that I can help them the best way possible, but also build a sustainable business.
Yeah, that's very challenging. It's challenging to find to make all that work. Like I use certain kind of measures for myself, like in terms of trying to find a way to make this work. Like I think one of the indicators for me that what we're doing is moving in the right direction is that. We've had a fairly limited reach, but the clients we talked to, it was pretty easy for us to fit their needs within the category of services that we offer. Mm-hmm. So for us, mentoring and apprenticeship, it's been kind of a big enough bucket to be able to say, we can help you. We might not be able to. It might not be like. The pricing for each client might be a little bit different because we have some clients that literally have us, pay us money to have a relationship with us. So they don't even have an expectation in terms of what services we're going to offer them. They just know that because having knowledge available to them is valuable. So when they need it, knowing that there's a relationship established, they could just tap into that has been very helpful. So we have some clients that paying for a service that they're hoping to use in the future in a way. Mm-hmm. And then there's others who are actively using the service. So they have developers who are building things and they need information, you know, every day. So they're paying more and they have kind of a bigger contract, but it's a similar service. You know, the kind of expectation of what they might have is the same. Mm-hmm. And that's been very helpful for us in making selling our services systematic, so that we don't have to, we have the same product description for all the clients. It's just that the amount might be different because your needs and volume might be different, right? So that's actually been very helpful for us in making selling our services easier.
Yeah, gotcha. I have one more sort of business development kind of question. Who would be your ideal client versus like who's the typical client, but who's the ideal client for who you serve right now?
So I would say there's ideal from different perspectives. Like there's some really lucrative clients that so that's one way of looking at it. I would say okay. I'd like to say it from perspective of the kind of category of use the kind of relationships that we like. So the relationships that we like are scenarios where we can be of help and people look to us to help them. And so that's kind of the fundamental thing because I've had situations where people come by our services, but their expectation isn't that we're going to help you and work with you. It's that we're just going to give you all the answers on every random question that might come up with. And it's not practical, it's not realistic. And so that kind of relationship, it takes some effort to convert them to a situation where we're actually working together. Well, let me help you understand where you went wrong in the first place, so that I don't have to answer your kind of long tail answer question, because I can actually answer, I can address the root cause of the problem, and so that's the dynamic that we're trying to create. The kind of clients that we would have with that, we have clients that go anywhere from, one person who's running, he represents the fund, and they're constantly working on projects, and we're available to them kind of on an ad hoc basis to and bring in people, like apprentices work with them to help them build their kind of startup initiatives that they have internally. To that's one category of clients that we have. We have a large enterprise that has 50 or 60 developers, and
Got it.
and they. They're like enterprise. It's a bank, right? So it's like everything that you'd expect a bank to be. And then there's everything in between, which is clients that have a team of 5 or 6 people who are building an application. We have one client who they have a 30-year-old application that they're rewriting in Ember, and so they have 6 people that have been writing their old application for almost 10 years, so now they're learning how to use Ember, and so we're helping them. So the users range quite a bit, but I would say anywhere our kind of requirement is that we need to be in a position where we're seen as working together to help you be better, as opposed to it's hard to point out exactly how it is, but it's really clear sometimes when that's not the case. So.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Just sort of get a little bit more context around what you do. Hey there, folks. We'll get back to the interview in 2 shakes of a lamb's tail. But first, are you a tech manager? Is leading your team like herding cats? Are you sick of making stuff up without trusted systems to guide you? Are your days filled with useless, time-sucking meetings? Join my Facebook group with other tech geeks who are coming together to build thriving, high-performing teams who don't need constant handholding. No HR BS, just real stories from real geeks who understand the nuances of being a techie. To join us, go to genbunk.com/Facebook. Without further ado, please enjoy the remainder of the interview. Training and teaching and mentoring and an apprenticeship are definitely themes that keep coming up as we're talking. So I want to dive a little bit deeper into the idea of mentoring. What do you th Well, so let's start with this. What do you think makes a great mentor?
I think, I've been thinking about this. I think a mentor is somebody who has a plan for the person that's learning. I think it's not, and I say this because if you make a system that answers questions, that system doesn't become a mentor for you. Right? Because it has, because it's not really invested in what your outcomes are going to be. It's just going to like Google is not a mentor. It's very helpful, right? But it's not, but it's not a it doesn't know what you're trying to do. And I think a mentor is somebody who is who thinks about what your future or your what your my plan might be, and then gives you information that is that is appropriate for your stage, the stage that you're at the moment, knowing that, you know, hopefully the relationship is going to continue, and I'll be able to help you when you're ready to cross the other part of the other part of your journey.
Yeah, I could definitely relate to that. When I think of the best mentors that I've had, and also the way that I try to approach mentoring, when I think of some mentors that I had earlier on, right, it wasn't just I asked the question and then they answered it. I asked the question, they answered it, but then they came up with more questions that I didn't realize that I even had, and said, yeah, you know what, you may think the problem is X, but it's actually X and A and B and C and D as well. Like, oh, wow, yeah, man. really screwed up, right? No, but in a good way, right? Where it's like, where I thought it was just this one thing and I need help with this one thing. Right. But a really good mentor will really probe into it and say, okay, but are you having trouble over here and here too? Well, yeah, you know what? Actually, I am. And then you sort of reveal the scope of the problem. And that's what a mentor, a human can do that Google can't.
Right.
Cool.
One of the challenges that developers a lot of times have, a lot of times people are ready to talk to somebody, like to a mentor, when they're in the process of trying to solve a problem, or they're really, and so there's a couple of categories of problems. Like one problem that developers have is, I would like to be, or a person has, like, I would like to be a developer, or I'd like to build a career being a developer. But how do I do that? Because, you know, starting off, it's a very lucrative field, but becoming part of that field and making a career is very difficult for a lot of people who are starting. And so one of the things that I find myself doing quite a lot is actually helping people become engineers and become developers. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times that is not just helping somebody know a specific technology well. It's also thinking for that person in terms of like how they could actually break into the industry. And so I've had to, in many ways, create opportunities for people to get their experience, to get their confidence up, so they can actually go and get that job, I've had one example where I met a developer, and he was really, I could tell he had a lot of potential. Mm-hmm. And he was still in university. He just finished university, and he was, I was asking him, so what's your plan? Like, what are you going to do? Where are you going to apply? He's like, well, I'm going to try to get an internship. And I'm like, I don't think you don't sound like a kind of person who needs an internship. I think you should go and get a job. Like, and I think you should go work at Google. Mm-hmm. You know, and so I talked to a few friends who were working at Google at the time, and I introduced them, and so he works at Google now. Mm-hmm. You know, and so that's the kind of, I think it's as a mentor, I think, you know, one of the things that you got to do is look out for the interests of the person who you're trying to mentor, and actually help them make progress in their life. Mm-hmm. And that goes way beyond just answering questions.
Yeah. And I think that opens up another set of questions around how do we help developers think about career planning. This is a question that lots of folks are interested in, not only the developers themselves, in folks like you, but also, say their managers and the folks that work directly with them and that want to help them. So around that, you know, building a career as a developer, I'm curious your take, your thoughts around what is the developer, or what is one developer career ladder, so to speak? And I actually like to think of it as more of like a tree as opposed to a ladder, because there's so many different branches that you can go off in. But how do you approach thinking about the career progression for someone who wants to be a career developer? That someone who wants to stay, you know, in the weeds, so to speak, that doesn't necessarily want to get into people management or C-level stuff, right? What might be a way of thinking about how they can think, what do I want to do 5 years from now, 10 years from now?
Yeah, that's tough. It's a tough question to answer. Mm-hmm. Because I think it's difficult because there are so many different paths that one can take.
Yep.
And those differences matter. It depends on what the person's interest is. And there's so many, there's also situational, you know, there's kind of conditions of the person's, or the person's context that affects the person's opportunities as well. Mm-hmm. Like, I know that living in Toronto, my opportunities are different than somebody who lives in San Francisco, for example, or somebody who lives in India.
Sure.
Right.
Yep.
But luckily, we have, there's one thing that's consistent, which is that if you work with people on the internet, then you have an opportunity to break down those barriers and to actually not really think about your place in the world as being your constraints. Like, I don't have to, I worked with one Canadian company in Toronto like 3 years ago, and every company I've worked with since then has been everywhere else in the world. So I think that if people, I think there's one thing that is extremely helpful, and that is to try to build relationships with people as much as possible, and thinking about ways to do that. So one way that is helpful is doing open source work. If, you know, for those who can, try to contribute to open source projects, because mm-hmm. you create relationships with people that you don't otherwise have access to. Mm-hmm. And that's been very helpful for me. I don't know if that's available to everybody. Like, I realize even for me, like, I don't have time to be doing open source work. Especially if I have to work, you know, if I work 40 hours a week with a client, I don't have time or really much interest in doing open source work. But mm-hmm. it's challenging trying to break in. But unfortunately, I think you have to put in more work in the beginning to break in than you would, you know, maybe later on in your career.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. So it sounds like your advice is, if you're trying to create one career ladder or career tree, so to speak, that there's going to be multiple trees that are going to be context specific depending on the kind of company you're working for, what country you're in, what kind of opportunities, but also that you may need to take it one step at a time, and those steps in the very beginning are going to feel painfully slow.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's something else I just want to add, that mm-hmm. there's one thing that I think is useful for anybody, and this is one of the things that I do. So part of the apprenticeship program, that the way we design apprenticeship program is that the person needs to have something that they can talk about, you know. So any time that you're thinking about what can I do to kind of further my career, is that you need to do something that is going to allow you to have in your job interview say, oh, look, I did this. Mm-hmm. And the more things that you have like that, it sounds like bragging, but practically speaking, this is what gets you the job in the interview, is being confident about the fact that
yep.
you did something and you can be proud of something. Like, that pride and that confidence is what gives people the confidence in having you solve problems for them. And so I think it's really helpful for people to think about what can I do that is going to give me something that I could say, okay, I'm proud of this. You know, I did this.
Yeah. Building that confidence and pride is just so key, especially in the beginning. Let's talk a little bit about teams now. The last time that we talked, you brought up the concept of providing an alternative to mediocrity. And I love thinking about it that way, that it's not just, we're not just going to do what everyone else is doing at an average level, that we're going to do something more, we're going to do something better when it comes to, you know, anything basically, but, you know, getting more on point, talking about creating engineering or developer teams who really raise the level and push the bar. So I'd love to hear your thoughts around this a little bit more of what you mean by alternative to mediocrity and how we get there and what that means.
Yeah, I guess it would be helpful to define what I think of mediocrity as, because I think we all have there's kind of a point of equilibrium where you are content with what's happening. I think that unfortunately for a lot of organizations, that can be the point of that equilibrium can be very, like, very rudimentary, very basic. You know, so, like one of the few jobs that I had, I was on a team where the point of equilibrium where we were okay was at a point where the team didn't really talk to each other. Everybody just kind of came in, sat down in front of the computers, and did work, and that was their okay. Mm-hmm. And for me, like, it was very obvious that this is not okay. And I think it's a sense of, not for every organization is different, for every scenario it's different. I mean, like, thinking about how I organize my team, but I think it's thinking of what would be, like, what is our kind of equilibrium right now? What can we do better? What's actually missing? Mm-hmm. So some of the kind of very positive relationships that I've had with our clients is a situation where a team is doing something, or the leadership of the organization is doing something that is not normal, that is not really conventional. Mm-hmm. So I would say bringing on a mentor at this point is still not conventional. It's not something most companies don't think about. Or let me make a mentor available for my team so that my team can get better. Mm-hmm. There are companies that think about it that way, but many companies are not thinking about that, and they're not asking their developers, like, what do you really need to be better, and what would you like?
Right. Yep.
So that for me, so like one of the ways that I find very easy to, you know, to push or to contribute to the team being less mediocre is by providing mentors to them. I think it really kind of, you know, it's an easy way for me to help them. But I think it's different for every company. I think every company needs to ask themselves, like, what am I saying is okay right now? Yeah. And what is really okay and versus what's not okay?
Yeah, and I could see that. The word that comes to mind as you were describing this idea of there's this point of equilibrium where people are just kind of content, but that's not okay. What I thought of was discomfort, and this idea that, like, if you're, I don't want to use too many double negatives, but if you're comfortable, that's not good, right? There needs to be some level of discomfort. You need to be pushing to your edge a little bit further in order to actually make progress. I mean, especially in an area like technology where stuff is just constantly changing and shifting, that we need to keep up with those or else we're moving backwards. Yeah, I see how, especially in organizations where the concept of mentoring developers is a little bit of a shift to the status quo, if not just completely out of the realm of what they thought they might do, that it's enough to sort of say, okay, here's this extra person who's coming in here now, who's here to help, that is enough to sort of shift that equilibrium in a good way, such that it's pushing people to their edge of discomfort in a way that makes them see things that they may not have seen before. And that's good for innovation, it's good for engagement, it's good for productivity and all that stuff.
Yeah, I would like to, like, I want companies to feel comfortable. There's a bit of a conflict there, like, where I think being comfortable is a wonderful feeling.
Yeah.
But you kind of have to pick your battles or pick your comforts, right? Like, you could say, I'm comfortable with how, I'm comfortable with the progress we made over the last 3 months, but don't necessarily assume that the fact that you're comfortable about something that means there's no other things you can make better. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, I think those things are not mutually exclusive. And a lot of times, like for poor leadership, I would say it's, you know, the leader feels comfortable, or I wouldn't say a leader, the person in charge feels comfortable when the people that are that should be comfortable are not really being asked. And a lot of times people that are, who are not in charge, they don't have, they're not in a position to say, you know, I don't like this. I don't like the fact that, you know, I'm coming into the office and, you know, I feel isolated, or, you know, or I feel like I'm just, I've been working nonstop for like 6 weeks and I don't really know why I'm doing this, you know, like, so being a leader, I think is something that, it's a very precious position to be in. It's a very special position to be in, but it's also a very difficult one, especially because being a leader is actually not easy, and not everybody's naturally born to be a leader.
Right.
So.
Yeah. And I'm glad that you brought that up, because one of the things that I've been thinking about as we've been talking is, you know, especially some of the ways that you help folks and the way that you've described the way that you help folks, I keep thinking in the back of my mind, okay, but if you had a really good manager, they should be doing that stuff. But it's just that it's exactly what you just said. Being a leader is hard. It's a precious position, right? And it's so precious. And there's so many hats that tech leaders, or say like an engineering manager, a manager of a team of developers, needs to wear, that they may be the first to admit, yeah, I could use a little bit of help here in mentoring my developers. So in that way, do you see yourselves as sort of advocates for and like partners with the managers, so that you can sort of help them to build a better team, as opposed to like in some circumstances it may be like, hey, why are you stepping in here? You know, that's my job, kind of thing. Do you see that kind of conflict at all?
Well, I definitely see working with the leadership team as a very collaborative effort. Mm-hmm. You know, I tell a lot of times that we'll talk with our clients about the fact that, you know, we're here to actually help you. So you can tell us what your challenges are, so we can actually help you with that. It doesn't need to be in any one particular thing, because we might be able to help you in a way that you didn't expect that a company might be able to help you, or, you know, so it's a kind of partnership, kind of a team effort. So we definitely have those kind of conversations. I think good managers, technical managers, so especially like VPs or team leads or kind of scrum masters, like good people in those positions tend to realize that more time we spend being good managers, less real useful technical skills they have.
Yep.
You know, that's a common problem, and it's not a problem. It's just a reality of what you focus. Like if I spend 3 months working in a management position, you know, I forget some of the things that I know about Amber, for example.
Right.
And so having people that they believe can provide the technical expertise so that they could focus on what they need to do for the organization, I think that's a very, very healthy thing to do. And it can be very liberating for everyone to know that there's a person that's dedicated to helping the technical team. There's a person who's thinking about what everybody needs to be productive and from like a business perspective, from management perspective. So like having people generally just feel comfortable and not feel overwhelmed and feel like there's enough resources to fill the gap, fill the necessary gaps or whatever is necessary for the team to be productive. I think it's a very empowering thing for the entire organization, everybody involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. The last question that I have for you is a question that I ask virtually everyone who comes on my podcast, and that is this. What is the biggest people-related challenge in your job?
People-related challenge. The biggest challenge that we encounter is, or I've encountered, is getting management to care about the needs of developers. I think that's it's particularly difficult in enterprise. It feels like you have to. It's very easy for business people to like worry about the needs of other business people, but a lot of times, developers' ability to deliver on what the business needs it's directly connected to their ability to be productive, and their ability to be productive is connected to like their needs and their priorities. You know, so having the business team say, I don't understand really why this is important because I have no way to connect to what you're saying, but I believe that this is important, and you know, go ahead and make that happen. You know, I think that can go a long way to having a development team, having a business team get what they want, and having a business team actually feel empowered to be productive and feel like their work actually matters, and they're not just, you know, fulfilling, just closing issues and, you know, just doing the work that the company needs without really consideration for them.
Yeah, I could definitely see how that would be more of a challenge. You know, sort of the business case for mentoring developers, how that may be more of a challenge, especially in bigger, huger organizations. But what about with smaller orgs? I mean, it's certainly gonna vary, but in my experience in talking with, you know, tech managers, for example, that they are usually more open to these kinds of things, and they have more of a direct line that they have the ear of the CTO, for example, or the ear of the person who can sign off on these kinds of things, because it's not so siloed, it's not so huge, it's just, yeah, let me just go ask this person and ask for this, and it's fine. So do you find that there's kind of a different dynamic with smaller organizations?
It's definitely easier with smaller organizations because everybody is more intimately aware of what's involved. Like if you only have one level between the CTO and the developer, that tends to be, the needs of the developer tend to be pretty high on the list. So, you know, some of the kind of places where you'd get developers that have two screens hooked up to their computers. Mm-hmm. And then the flip side of that, you know, in enterprise, you might have a situation where developers don't even have a mouse, they have to use trackpad, you know, so it's because there's such a huge difference, like there's so many layers between the people that are actually writing the code and the people that are setting the priorities, you know, and creating the reasons why that code's being written.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's why, again, it comes back to context. We need to make sure that we understand what kind of organization that they're working for, you know, who their boss is, what country they're in. Context is just so important.
Definitely.
Yeah. All right. So we were just about up on time. So it was absolutely great talking with you, Taras.
It's my pleasure. I'm really glad to have an opportunity to talk about business, because it's so, I have so many technical conversations and they're fascinating, but having being able to use my other side of the brain is really fun. So I really appreciate having this conversation with you.
Great. Thanks so much, Taras.
My pleasure.
Great. So that was Taras Mankowski. He's again the CTO of This Dot, and he's known online as Ember Sherpa. Bye for now.